Talking Golf with Alan Gorey is brought to you by the Travelers Championship. This is where greatness locks in, where the wins hit harder. For four perfect days in June, see returning champion Keegan Bradley and more of the world's best like Scottie Scheffler, Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Rose, and Cameron Young at nearby TPC River Highlands, June 24th through the 28th. For tickets and information, visit TravelersChampionship.com. The Travelers Championship. Now is the time. This is the place. The landscape of LIV Golf has changed drastically and quickly these last couple weeks. The Saudi Public Investment Fund will stop financing LIV Golf after the 2026 season. Yasser Al-Rumayran is stepping down as chairman of LIV Golf. LIV Golf is undergoing an overhaul, establishing a new independent board to guide the league. Investment bankers Gene Davis and John Zinman are leading the new board and will be bringing in expertise for restructuring and securing long-term capital. Boy, the numbers that have been reported by season's end, more than $6 billion will have been invested since LIV's inception in 2022. You know, financially, to me, it never seemed viable or sustainable from a return of investment perspective. However, it can be argued that LIV Golf did work in the following areas. LIV forced its way into the power structure of golf. It did not just enter the game, it disrupted the game. It pushed the PGA Tour into major structural and financial changes. It drove up purses and player compensation. It triggered negotiations and outside investments into the tour. It brought global attention instantly to Saudi Arabia, inserting the Saudis into the golf conversation as they signed top players and dominated headlines. It showed that loyalty can be bought. The questions now are, what happens to LIV and the players who made that jump? Joining me now is one of the game's most insightful and at times provocative voices, a lead analyst for the Golf Channel, Brandel Chamblee.
Always happy to talk to you, Ann. Absolutely. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, I was always opposed to LIV Golf. To me, it was simply a question of loyalty versus greed. How do you feel at this point with everything going on?
Well, everything you said there, and in particular, proved that loyalty can be bought. I would have to agree with it. It's certainly disruptive. It did throw the golf world into turmoil. Yeah, it did result in raised purses. That's what competition generally does. But I would think more importantly and more egregiously and far more of a concern is it tilted the game towards greed, and perhaps irreparably so. It muddied the meritocratic waters of the game. It sort of turned what had always been the best aspect of golf, besides its philanthropic component, has always been it was about merit, pure merit. For the most part, it was about, have you qualified? Why are you here versus somebody else? You have to make a cut. And it turned a competition into an exhibition. LIV was about selection. And the world saw through it. We don't have a lot of time every day to do all the things we got to do. And we watch sporting events that matter. And because it was clearly, transparently an exhibition, and because it was so transparently about sports washing, not about getting the best players in the world together, nobody thought that the Saudis really cared about golf. And it turns out that no matter how big the ruse, no matter how much money you throw at an idea, if it's a bad idea and it doesn't resonate, you're not going to get it out off the ground. So they were bleeding billions. And so, yeah, it's going to be reorganized. And, if it's not the Saudis' money and they're not trying to launder their reputation, and it's another organic golf league, they're going to have a tough time of it, though. And they probably need to restructure and rename it, because LIV is such a toxic name in the game. Nobody's going to watch it if it's named LIV. If it goes back and restructures, as so many businesses have, renames and comes back, I just don't see how they're going to pull it off, though. The idea that the PGA Tour is a monopoly is ludicrous. There's a Japanese tour, an Australasian tour, an Asian tour, a Latin American tour, a South American tour, a DP World Tour, and scores of other tours. It's just that the PGA Tour is the best, because this is where most of the money is, that is willing to pay and align itself with the game of golf. It's where the best courses are. It's where the courses are in the best condition. And that's why everybody wants to come over here and play. So good luck to another tour trying to compete with that.
Well, talking about greed, do you think the stars that bolted to live were misguided? Obviously so, but were the agents to blame?
You raise a great point, and I don't think that the agents have gotten enough derision directed towards them. They're meant to look after the legacy of their players, the best interests of their players, and they wanted their 20% or 10% of whatever the Saudis were dishing out, a Niagara of money, and they wanted it. And in a lot of cases, they push their professional golfers in that direction, not caring about the legacy or, what would Ian Poulter's end of his career look like, or Lee Westwood's, or Henrik Stenson's, or for that matter, Phil Mickelson's. I'm not sure that you could have coerced Phil into anything other than what Phil thought. I think that the agents were to blame, but along those lines, there are plenty of good actors in this. Mark Steinberg didn't push his players towards it. I jokingly said there should be a statue of Mark Steinberg right up in front of the PGA Tour headquarters, because he, and I had a conversation with Mark Steinberg a couple of years ago at Valhalla, during the PGA, about that very subject. So not all agents did, but some of
Some of
them. And then, just a lot of players, when push came to shove, were happy to take those hundreds of millions after they had essentially lambasted LIV, like Jon Rahm.
Brianna, if the Saudis with all their money don't think LIV is viable, how are they going to convince investors to come in?
I don't know. I used to get that question all the time when I was criticizing LIV. The question would always come up. Like, it cracked me up that people would ask this question. Well, what if Australia was behind it? Or, what if a businessman were behind it? And I said, okay, sure. Then would I have a problem with it? No. But nobody in their right mind would have the business model of LIV. The reason they were willing to overpay and the reason they had to overpay is because everybody knew it was a ruse. It wasn't about golf. It was about, in a sense, paying tour players hazard pay, because they knew it was going to damage their reputation and their legacy, and for that matter, their ability to compete at the highest level. So this would be a bit like, and I made this analogy, you run Mercedes. And this is where I think Jay Monahan gets unfairly maligned. You're the CEO of Mercedes. BMW decides to start giving away their cars for free. And you know what? Your sales are going to go down. They're going to tank at Mercedes. You can't compete with an irrational actor like that. Now, is the CEO of Mercedes to blame for that? That someone comes along who's completely irrational? Not in my estimation. So if somebody wants to take over this catastrophe that LIV is and try to make it work, good luck to them. They're going to waste billions of dollars and time and ideas, because the legacy of the PGA Tour is important, and the best tournaments in the world are here.
So now, what do you think the PGA Tour should do about potential pathways for these players who want to come back?
I think it'll be case by case. It depends on how involved the players were with the lawsuit against the PGA Tour and how long they sat on that lawsuit. Like, Bryson DeChambeau sat on that lawsuit the entire time until it dissolved in June 6th. Okay. Phil Mickelson sat on that lawsuit. Phil Mickelson was recruiting players while he was an active PGA Tour player. He was recruiting players to LIV. To what extent they denigrated the PGA Tour on their way out, maybe how much money they made. Every one of them is going to have, I think, a rockier and more punitive road back than Brooks Koepka did, and Patrick Reed, even, who had to go back to the DP World Tour to qualify and try to work his way on the PGA Tour. Those two players left of their own will. Everybody else who's coming back is only coming back because LIV collapsed. So I don't think the road back is going to be as quick. They should go to the Korn Ferry Tour and have to play, or go qualify on the DP World Tour. And if they already have existing exemptions, okay, maybe they can come back and play the lesser PGA Tour events and have to earn their way back into the upper echelons of golf on the PGA Tour.
Brando, why do you think Jon Rahm was so hesitant in resolving his issues with the DP World Tour? I know that's been resolved recently, but why do you think it took him so long?
Because he's he lives probably in a little echo chamber where he believes he's right, and he thinks he's standing on principle when he violated the rules of the DP World Tour, and everybody else paid the fines to be considered for the Ryder Cup. It's a potential chaotic situation for the next Ryder Cup in Ireland, because although I'll say this, John didn't play well when they played at Bethpage. He didn't play well. He wasn't last, but he was close to last on that team in terms of his contribution. And they still dominated the US team. So I think Europe figured out that they can play well without Jon Rahm. And by the way, Jon Rahm's game has slipped such that he's no longer the player that he used to be. So he's not that integral to the success of the European team. And he certainly wasn't on foreign soil, and I doubt that he will be on more friendly soil. So, but he's going to have to pay tens of, not hundreds of millions of dollars if he wants to come back to the PGA Tour. It's funny. They were all paid hundreds of millions, tens of millions of dollars to go play for LIV. They come back and play for the PGA Tour, they're going to have to pay for the privilege, tens of hundreds of millions of dollars. And the juxtaposition of those two is that one was about sports washing and the other is just about competition. You want to be a part of this, you got to earn it.
What about Phil Mickelson? Do you think, and we haven't heard a peep from Phil Mickelson in a while now, but I wonder if he had to have seen the writing on the wall with all this live.
Maybe. I'm not sure what's going on with Phil. I wish him and Amy well. He's got an adorable wife, and Amy, everybody loves her. I kind of miss Phil as a voice in the game. If Phil hadn't left for LIV, if he hadn't so heavily denigrated the PGA Tour, these people, by the way, they wanted to destroy the PGA Tour. They didn't want to compete alongside the PGA Tour. They wanted to destroy it. Phil Mickelson, Greg Norman, they thought they were smarter than the PGA Tour. So, Phil's, if he hadn't gone to LIV, Phil would have probably been the lead voice at CBS. He would have been an honorary starter at Augusta. He would have been doing corporate outings for millions of dollars. He would have made, and we've, Rich Lerner, myself, we've talked to people who are well versed in these things. He would have made 30, 40, $50 million a year for the rest of his life and would have been a very important voice in the game. And the self-immolation of his legacy by saying the things he said on the way out, I don't think he'll recover from that. And I don't think he'll find a way back to the PGA Tour.
It's such a shame, particularly after he won, the championship at on Kiawah Island, and oh my gosh, he was on such a high at that point, and his deep dive
He
just
was.
was incredibly sad. The way the PGA Tour schedule is set up right now with these signature events, we're not seeing the best players in the world compete against each other, which is really what their ultimate goal was. When they were kind of restructuring this tour, I mean, Rory's playing different events than Scottie Scheffler. It's because of the schedule and timing, and so I don't think the PGA Tour schedule is working either.
Well, the tour players all have autonomy. They can do whatever they want to do. They're not contracted to all show up at the same places at the same time. So if you've got, 100 odd players, it stands to reason they're going to have different schedules, different agendas, different things going on at home. So one week is not going to work for a few players, and the next week is not going to work for a few more. But the idea that we need all the best players in the world playing together, I think, is misguided. If you go back to the 80s, all the best players in the world played in Europe. They did not play, they were not part of the PGA Tour. They did not play except majors. So you're talking about Nick Faldo, Bernhard Langer, Seve Ballesteros, Jose Maria Olazabal, Ian Woosnam, Sandy Lyle. These were all the best players in the world. And they played in Europe. And they came and played in the majors. And that's about the only time we saw them, in the majors and the Ryder Cup. You know what? The PGA Tour did just fine. So I'm a, and this is one of the ways when I say it's tilted the PGA towards greed. Now the best tour players have a ridiculous amount of power that they should not have. And the first thing they did is made the field smaller, reduced the number of cards, and took away the cut. Well, those are three things where you've guaranteed to deliver a product to the audience that is less competitive. The difference between the best player, Scottie Scheffler, and an average tour player is only about 3.5%. It's not like other sports where the difference is 20 or 30% between Tom Brady and the average quarterback in the NFL. It's 3.5%. Underdog stories matter in this game, they resonate. You have to keep those pipelines open. Fields should be at a minimum 120. At a minimum, they should be 120. They should be as large as you could possibly make them. There should be cuts. There shouldn't be 100 tour cards. There should be 125. Why did they just randomly reduce it from 125 to 100? Because they think they're making the tour harder. What they've done is they've guaranteed that it is less competitive. The landscape of golf should have plenty of room for people to move in and out. And of course, yeah, there will be relegation and promotion within smaller tours, but you've reduced the opportunity of underdog players to come in and disrupt the tour. The WGCs were a failure. They brought the best players in the world all together to play in big cities, and they were a failure. Why were they a failure? Well, because we saw the same players every week competing against the same players. There was no novelty in them. And Tiger Woods won half of them, more than twice his win percentage over the course of his career. His career win percentage is around 22%. In the WGCs, it was almost 50. So the world grew tired of them. And they, you know, there was just no market for them. So these signature events, they sound good in theory. But I think they've irreparably tilted the game towards greed.
I was just going to ask you, do you think the players in golf now are making too much money?
Well, the market determines what they're worth. And, you know, there's been competition in the game of golf. And so this is what the market allows. I think now that LIV is off the table, and there's been pushback on this, you know, I've heard that I've heard people say that there won't be a falling off of the purses, which is, you know, it's hard for me to believe because I don't think that the current purses are sustainable given the ratings. You know, golf is a niche sport and, you know, they're not going to draw. Okay, the Masters gets a big number and then progressively less than the other majors, but they're not going to draw 20 million people to watch. You know, they're not. They get 2, 3, 4 million, and that's a pretty good weekend. So I don't know how that the ratings justify these purses. I'm not sure how they're sustainable. They're certainly, I can't imagine that they would grow. There's got to be a leveling off of these purses. And the idea is that we're going to guarantee bringing the very best players in the world together. How are they going to guarantee it? They don't all show up every week, you know? Who skipped last week? Rory, Xander Schauffele, Matt Fitzpatrick. And I don't think Scottie Scheffler's playing this week. They don't all show up because they're not contractually obligated to all show up. And there's no avenue to contractually obligate these players. They try to incentivize them with points and money. Doesn't work. You know, the best players can play their 15, 16, 18 tournaments and get everything done they need to get done.
These signature events, Brandel, ultimately, it's really the sponsors that are taking the hit. I mean, $20 million in prize money, that's a big difference from
Well,
years
it's not
past.
just the prize money, it's the build out. And then, you know, paying for TV. I'm no expert in how these things get put on, but I listen to people talk about it's not just the prize money, it's upwards of 20, 25, 30, $35 million to put these tournaments on. And maybe for some of them, they can handle the losses and it's worth the recognition and the alignment with the PGA Tour because it is an amazing product. It's one of the most enviable products and has the most enviable demographic in all of sport. So maybe they're willing to sustain those losses as sort of a loss leader to affiliate with the PGA Tour. And maybe that will be the case. You know, I've never understood, you know, from an economic position, how the Champions Tour makes it. But when you look a little closer to the Champions Tour, you realize that these are large corporate outings and they quite enjoy the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday pro-ams and the alignment with the PGA Tour. So I can't imagine that too many of the Champs Tour events are hugely profitable, but they've been going now for 46 years.
And I'm sure they wish they were would be helped a little bit more by the PGA Tour and the monies coming into the PGA Tour,
Well,
the Champions PGA Tour.
that's part of the emergence of LIV. All of a sudden brought questions about what are we going to do to shore up the PGA Tour, and it didn't happen. The Korn Ferry Tour is still alive and well, and there's a commitment by Brian Relap and his team, I think, to continue the importance of that. But I do believe the Champs Tour lost their retirement. That went away. So again, the question comes: how do you pay for all of these things that the PGA Tour has been doing, and how do you still contribute to all of the necessary, the wonderful charities that the PGA Tour and their partners in all of these events where they run these tournaments? So PGA Tour says that they give X amount of dollars to charity. In that number are all these tournaments contributions. So the Thunderbirds give 18 million. Now, you could say that the PGA Tour provides the players and the Thunderbirds provide the tournament. So they are in partnership together. They're all helping. But the WM Phoenix Open Thunderbirds, they give away about it'll be over $20 million this year to charities in the Phoenix area. My big question is, since private equity now is such a big part of the tour, are they going to ask for a larger cut of that philanthropy? And what I'm hearing is no, they're not going to. And if that's the case, that's great, because the philanthropy has always underpinned the tour.
Absolutely. Hopefully the charity component will stay because that's one of the greatest things about professional golf. Two more questions, Brandel. How would you like to see the PGA Tour restructured, the schedule in the future?
Well, I would have to give that some thought, Anne. I honestly don't see the problem with the PGA Tour. When people complain and say the PGA Tour need to reorganize, I'm like, really? Okay, what are you going to do? Are you telling me that 72 holes medal play is a bad way to decide a champion? The tour hasn't developed stars. Tiger Woods came along and dominated the game. It's the most compelling. Are we just having a post Tiger Woods hangover and say, since he's not playing anymore, we've got to somehow artificially manipulate the tour to where we have, you can't possibly recreate Tiger Woods and what he meant to the game. But in the, what have we had since then? Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Scottie Scheffler, Brooks Koepka. We've had incredibly compelling golf and figures come along. I was never buying the fact that there was something wrong with the PGA Tour. Never. Never did buy it. Still don't buy it. You want to tell me where it's wrong? It gives an incredible amount of money to charity. We got a beautiful backdrop in our house and in our clubs and in our restaurants everywhere we go. They're playing somewhere every week, which this is a participatory sport. We don't watch golf like we watch every other sport. You watch football because, you're from Philadelphia and you want to watch the Eagles and you got to bet on the game. Nobody's watching football thinking, I wonder if I could throw like that or. Is my arm like Tom Brady's? Nobody's watching football or baseball thinking about their own football game or their own baseball game. But we watch golf for a myriad of reasons. One, we all play it and love it, so we're also trying to get better. And another, because we want to travel to wherever this tour event is the next week or the next year. And what's that like? And can we get our friends to go with us? And can we rub elbows with these tour players, et cetera, et cetera? There's a million reasons we watch golf. Maybe I'm in a small majority. I never saw any problem with the PGA Tour other than the Tour Championship. They've never figured out how to run how to get the perfect format for the Tour Championship. But nonetheless, golfers watch. You're not going to get other sports people to watch golf, and unless you tilt the game towards gambling, and my fear is that they're going to disproportionately tilt the game towards gambling like other sports so that they can increase the value in golf. And I think that would be incredibly short-sighted.
I agree with you. I'm a traditionalist. Let it be. my last question, how do you think this era in golf will be viewed in the broader history of the game?
I think we're very fortunate to have people in this era at the top of the game that we have. I don't know if there's ever been a player with as much generosity of spirit who's as great a player as Rory McIlroy in the game of golf. I mean, yeah, he's a bit like if you put Bobby Jones and Arnold Palmer together, you know, because Rory's a very smart guy, incredibly aware, incredibly socially aware, self-aware, and generous. I mean, his run up to the Masters doesn't get enough credit. You know, he was there. He was doing all the right things. He was on site for the Augusta National Women's Amateur, did all the interviews on site for the DCP, did all the interviews, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, arguably gave the greatest ever champions dinner, and then went out and won the golf tournament. You know, I think we're very lucky to have Rory. We're very lucky to have Scottie Scheffler at the top. We're very lucky to have Xander Schauffele. We're very lucky to have Shane Lowry. We're very lucky to have Matt Fitzpatrick. You know, we're very lucky to have Lydia Ko. We're very lucky to have Gino Titicun. You know, we're lucky in that I think America's got another dominating star in the LPGA and Nelly Korda. I think this is an incredible era. Everybody's going to point and compare it to Tiger's era and say, you know, we don't have that. Okay, guess what? I watched the Kentucky Derby this weekend and Secretariat didn't win. And the horse that did win, Golden Tempo, I think would have been like 10 lengths behind Secretariat. There's never going to be another Secretariat. There's never going to be another Tiger Woods. But we're pretty dang close. And not only are the golfers of this era phenomenal athletes, they're great to listen to and great stewards of the game. And so we're back with great stewards of the game at the top. So I think this is an incredible era.
I agree. Well said as usual. Thank you so much, Randall, for your insight. Really, I always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you, Anne. I really appreciate it. And congratulations to you for all you're doing in the game.